Hey there, comic book fans. This is Felicia D. Henderson, former writer of Teen Titans comic book and currently a writer and co-executive producer of Marvel's The Punisher on Netflix. And you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Hey there, fangirls and fanboys, lovers of all things nerdy and geeky. Welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber. Man, we're going to cover a lot of ground today with my special guest. She got her start in showbiz with 1990 sitcoms. These days, she's a writer and co-executive producer of Marvel's The Punisher on Netflix. Now, how do those two worlds merge? You are going to find out when I sit down to chat with Felicia D. Henderson in just a few moments. This is going to be fun. First show of 2018, totally stoked for this. I've been waiting for this year to roll around because 2018 is the 80th anniversary year of my favorite comic book character of all time. You longtime listeners of this very show, you know who that is. The Man of Steel, the last son of Krypton, Kal-El. That's right, Superman. May 1938, Action Comics number one hit the newsstands. Superman was created by two amazing talents, not too far away from me right now, over in Cleveland, Ohio, Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. 2018 is also the 30th anniversary year of the Superboy TV series that premiered October 1988. And, of course, December 1978, my favorite comic book movie of all time, the gold standard, if you will, Superman the movie premiered December 1978. This year is going to be the 40th anniversary of that film, so a lot of Superman anniversaries going on. They will not go unnoticed on this very show. As I always do, I will celebrate anniversaries all year long with special guests from these projects and many others. Now, if you're new to Comic Book Central, welcome to the lair. Glad to have you on board. A lot of Superman-themed guests over the years, many from Superman the movie, including the legendary director of the film, Richard Donner. He was here. That was a fun conversation. So if you're a Superman fan, if you love Superboy, Supergirl, anything involving the world of Superman, there are a lot of interviews out there already in the archive. You can find them at comicbookcentral.net. Of course, episodes are available if you subscribe to the show on iTunes. You get every episode that way. They're all out there, over 200 of them. You can find them all at a new outlet for Comic Book Central as well, blogtalkradio.com. A lot of other cool pop culture podcasts over there on Blog Talk Radio. You want to check that out as well. You can also find the show on Google Play, Blueberry, Stitcher, and you can follow Comic Book Central on Twitter, like it on Facebook. That's where you're going to find an episode guide on Facebook in the About section. Working on posting that to the website as well. Also, a search feature on the website for the episodes. It's coming, I promise. We're working on it now, so some behind-the-scenes stuff there, but easier to find the episodes that way too. So a lot of ways to listen to the show and a lot of super guests out there waiting for you if you haven't heard them, and more on the way, including my special guest today. She is super talented, super funny, super smart, and a super writer, producer, and showrunner. We're getting a look behind the scenes of some big time TV today. That's what's on tap for today. First, check this out. Then I will be right back to chat with Felicia D. Henderson. Felicia grew up in a large family in California, and she loved comic books as a kid. She earned her degree in psychobiology from the University of California, Los Angeles, and got her MBA in corporate finance from the University of Georgia. But how does that translate into writing and producing for some of the hottest sitcoms in the 90s, like The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Family Matters, Moesha, Sister Sister, the teen drama Gossip Girl, sci-fi favorite Fringe, writing and revising scripts for feature films, and creating, executive producing, and writing the hit show The Quad for BET. How does all that happen? Well, you're going to find out soon. Felicia's love of comic books as a kid, that paid off in 2009 as her writing talents were showcased in a year-long run on DC Comics' Teen Titans, as well as a one-shot special issue of Static Shock, and she is currently part of the team bringing the world of Marvel Comics to life on Netflix with The Punisher.
Frank Castlestack.
The Punisher. He's dead.
This look like the work of a dead man to you.
Now, from Urkel to The Punisher, my guest today, she has done it all. She is an award-winning writer, producer, director. Season 2 of her series, The Quad, that premieres on BET January 23rd. A big welcome to Felicia D. Henderson. Felicia, welcome to Comic Book Central.
Thank you very much. I had a little giggle when you said from Urkel to The Punisher. I go, wow, that is quite a journey, isn't it?
That's the comic book crossover I want to see. Hey, we got Archie versus The Punisher. I want to see Urkel versus The Punisher. Can you write that one for us?
I would love to write that one. Nothing would be more fun.
Yes. Well, look, some of these, IDW has like all the license to everything and Dynamite. Who knows? Comic books, you can cross over in anything. Okay, more challenging to write, Urkel or The Punisher? Which one?
Oh, gosh. I'm going to go Urkel.
Okay. Just finding new ways to say, did I do that?
Well, first of all, there are several ways to say that. I think that, you know what? I think that, obviously, this will sound crazy, but I think The Punisher is closer to who I am. And so, I mean, I get to do the things that he does, but he's closer to who I am, and that may be why, you know, I find him easier to write than I did Steve Urkel.
Are you telling us something about you as a boss in that comment?
Maybe I shouldn't. I think I'm going to end this interview now.
Where have we gone? We've gone completely off the rails. Look, we're going to talk about sci-fi. We're going to talk about comic books. We're going to talk about the Marvel Netflix universe. You're now part of that now, so it's very cool. But first, what can you tell us about The Quad? Season 2 coming up. What do we need to know about Season 1? What can you tell us about Season 2?
Yes. Well, what you need to know about Season 1 of The Quad is that BET is re-airing it now so that everyone can get caught up, and I think we'll be doing so until Season 2 premieres on January 23rd, 10 p.m. Eastern.
Nice.
So it gives you an opportunity to catch up, and it's also like a very big cast, and so that's a good reason to catch up too. Like, what were all those people doing? Because the show is based on a college campus. Obviously got a people that campus with lots of characters. So it's a big cast and worth catching up on. I think on Season 1, we were really learning who the characters were and what they're about. And I think that for Season 2, the big question is sort of who do we say we are and who are we really in terms of our actions. And so I think we, for that reason, take a more political stance in Season 2. And the overall arc of Season 2 is about what a lot of the show is based at a historically black university. And what is happening with a lot of such schools is, you know, having financial issues. And so we take a look at that over the season and what it means to possibly be taken over by a predominantly white institution if you're an institution where culture and history and is everything. So we take a look at that and a whole bunch of other stuff. There's fun, there's laughs, but there's a lot of really serious drama.
I was
going to
say,
well,
it is a drama, It's not some of the sitcoms you know, you cut your teeth on when you're just getting into the biz. You co-created the show. I'm guessing just looking at your background, there's probably a lot of different influences, both in real life and then some of the shows that you worked on and wrote for. So what were some of those influences that you can now bring to this experience in writing for The Quad?
Oh, gosh. I think that it's probably more, the two things. The first thing on a professional level is that I have tended to write a lot of things with ensemble casts. So I think that, and that's what this is, and it's one of the things that I think is my strong suit is, you know, writing, sort of keeping several balls in the air in terms of writing different characters. So I think that's what I bring to it from a professional point of view. I've just had the privilege of writing a lot of ensemble stuff, both in comedy and in drama. And I think on a personal level, because one, you know, as a college-educated person, who went through the experience of what is it like to be a freshman, because mostly we follow like six freshmen and the new woman president of the school. So I think that from a person who went through that, obviously there are lots of tales to tell. And then I think that for the Dr. Eva Fletcher character, the president, it's what does it mean to be a leader, to be a boss? It's, you know, in some ways you think of what does it mean to be a showrunner, and how are those things the same. What does it mean to be a woman, you know, who's in charge of a world where it is mostly you're surrounded by men who don't want you there? So all of those things, both professionally and personally, are things that I think any woman who's attained any amount of influence can relate to.
And it goes even deeper than that for your lead character too, doesn't it, as far as her discomfort? Because it's almost like a culture shock for her, isn't it? Like she comes from the Northeast and she's in the South, and so she like, explain that for our listeners, though. Like what her perceptions were taking her new job and then sort of the reality that hit her.
Absolutely. And in season one, we really dealt a lot with the culture shock, and we see her make some major changes to survive in this culture in season two. But one of the things that was very important to myself and the co-creator, Charles Holland, is the idea of, you know, that Black life and Black people are not monolithic. So that even though this is a, you know, historically Black college campus, it doesn't mean that any Black woman can come in and be comfortable here and do well here. So she is Eva Fletcher, who's played by Anika Noni Rose, is from Connecticut, and she's well-to-do, and she's Ivy League educated, and she comes from a wealthy background and just assumes, well, I'm Black, they're Black, it'll all be fine. But she learns very quickly that it is absolutely not so. And, you know, the Southern experience, particularly one that is so rich, the Southern college experience, I should say, that is so rich in history and the very real needs of these schools to exist when, you know, they were being founded at a time where Blacks weren't allowed to go to predominantly white schools. So there's a lot going on that so for her, it has been quite a culture shock. And you know, so it's class, it's race, it's gender. All of those are, you know, issues that she's dealing with as she makes this transition from a very different background.
Oh, as a writer, you just got to love that too, and your writing staff
on
the show. That's got to be just, you can just tear into that. There's just so much material there. So, well, like you said, first season, they're running them now. I think they're online too. I think you can catch them online. So if you
BT.com. Yeah.
So get caught up and we'll check it out there. You can binge watch it just like Punisher. Everything's binge watching now.
Everyone is. I'm not a binge watcher, but I know that most people are these days.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to talk about that too, about like how that impacts writing, but we'll get to that. I want to step back just a little bit. You know, we talk about comic book writing, so you've got both. You had your feet in both worlds there. I want to go back and get your origin story. What comic books inspired you growing up? Because you did read some comic books as a young girl, didn't you?
Oh yes. Okay. Well, you know, as a young kid, I was a sickly kid and really just super bad asthma and back and forth to the hospital all the time. And didn't get to go outside. I grew up in L.A. at a time where, you know, it was a lot smoggier than it is now. And so I'd have to stay inside while my brothers and sisters played outside. And so I was, it made me an avid reader. And it made me also a kid who wanted to create a world that was different than the one that I had to live in. Just from the point of view of my health issues. And so I was a reader, and my mom would go and buy secondhand comic books down at the, you know, local secondhand store and bring them to me. And the first one she ever did that was Batman.
Oh, wow.
And I just fell in love. Now, she's bringing Batman for me, and for my older sisters who were teens, she was bringing Archie's.
Okay, I was wondering about that, because that for a young girl, I would not start her off on Batman. I don't know if I would do that.
No, she didn't know any better.
I know, it's
comic
books,
right? She was just like, here's what they've got down at the secondhand store, you know,
or
the Salvation Army. Yeah, exactly. And my sisters were like, what is this? You know, they kind of tossed them to the side. And for their Archies, and my sister, they loved Archies. They loved Archies' music. They loved everything Archies. And I would be, you know, in my bed with my Batman comic books, and I just, like,
awesome.
I really felt I understood him.
Wow.
I felt like, you know, I had both of my parents and all of that, but I just felt, like, lost in a world where I wanted things to be different, and I felt like that's what it was about. I felt like I wanted to make it a better place. I felt like, you know, if I could rid it of evil, mostly my brother, you know, then I would rid it of evil, you know. So I would rid the world of evil, like, but of course I was like, or just my brother, that would be enough.
Close
evil,
enough.
You know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, you're right, really, to what you know, right?
I mean, that's... Yes, exactly. But it was really, like, I really related to him and thought, and I want to grow up to be Bruce Wayne. Like, I really, it just was something that I really related to. It really spoke to me and always had. I think I first started college, I went away from it for a while, and then was as an adult, you know, that I came back to it.
When you were going to college, when you were starting, you weren't intending to get into television writing, You were more looking at the management side, the more business end of it, correct?
Oh, well, not even probably as a young adult, you know, as an undergrad, I was a psychobiology major because I was a math and science geek, you know, as a kid. So I guess I was a little like Urkel. And now that I think about it, so... it all comes together, right? So that's what I was really pursuing as an undergrad. It wasn't until I went to get my MBA and was looking to get, you know, any kind of financial help I could that I learned of a NBC and the Peabody Foundation had a fellowship that it's so that if you were interested in management and television, you know, they would pay for your MBA. And so I applied for that and got it. And that's where I really got my first, you know, introduction to television at all was through NBC paying for my graduate degree. And then from that, it led me to the NBC management training program where I was called an associate's program. So I was a broadcast associate.
Now, what does that mean? What does a broadcast associate do?
Oh, my gosh. It was so wonderful because you really learned the entire network business. And to learn that at NBC, when NBC was the number one network, was wonderful. So that you are rotating, it's an 18-month program where you rotate it through every department from, you know, the promotions, the on-air promotions department, the publicity department, the comedy and drama development departments. So that you really, the scheduling department, you really understood, you know, everything about how a network was run. And everyone was so welcoming and warm and, you know, was a wonderful place to be. So from that point of view, you know, and I started in New York and then, which is more the business side, and then transferred to Burbank, which is where the more creative side of the business. So I feel like I got a wonderful overall view of what it's like to run a network. It was a lot of fun. I really appreciate those days.
Now, I heard you in one recent interview, and I love this part. Segueing into the writing part came about because you were reading a lot of horrible scripts.
Well, horrible is a very strong word.
I think you used the word awful. I think you did.
Well, awful is a very horrible word. I think that, you know what, really it was, you know, you're reading all these scripts as they come in when I was, you know, in comedy development, and you just get curious. And, I mean, it's not like I was brilliant and was the only one who can see they were horrible. You'd hear, you know, some of the people, that the executives. That
no, but there's a lot of bad TV. Yeah, we know. There's a lot of bad television. Yeah,
and and I would go, wow, I didn't know anyone in television. I had never worked in television before. So for me, I was very curious about how does this process go wrong? And what does the writer think? Are they like, boy, I just turned in a kick-ass script, it's going to be the next big hit? Or do they know that it went off the rails a bit? Like, I was just curious about those kind of things and asked a lot of questions and finally got around to the question of how much did they get paid to write this really, you know, awful script?
See, you said awful. See, I knew you said that.
I did. Yes. I did say awful. I did. I said that, but I did. And then I found out. And I was like, wow, you know, I want to try this. I could be at least this awful, you know. My supervisors at the time just encouraged me, you know. So it was not a career that I was thinking about. I thought I would At the time, Warren Littlefield was the president of NBC, so I'm like, I want to be Warren Littlefield. I thought that's where I was going to go one day, that I would, you know, stay in the on the management side.
Call the shots as to what shows get picked and get the lineup and do all, Well, good for us.
I enjoyed it. It was a game of chess. Like, I really enjoyed learning of the scheduling and why and what goes together and why you partner this and when this comes, you know, and it was a brilliant place to learn all of that. So I thought, I knew I wanted to be the boss, you know, and I just thought it was going to be on that, on the management side.
Yeah. No, well, good for us. You got into writing because, man, there's some great stories, some great scripts, some great show running. I'm looking
Thank
at some
you.
Of these things. Fringe, one of our all-time favorite shows.
Yeah.
We got to love Gossip Girl. So I'm curious how, okay, so how did the worlds of Fringe and Gossip Girl come together to lead you into comic book writing?
Yes. Well, I know. See, when you say this about this journey from Urkel to the Punisher.
It's everything.
yes. Everything. Everything I do, every step that I have along my journey, the next step seemingly has nothing to do with the last.
Yeah.
So I am a person who I do like a challenge. I do like trying things I haven't tried before. But that case, as different as those shows were, Gossip Girl and Fringe, it was the combination of those two credits that got me the opportunity to write for DC. And as crazy as that sounds, I will always have, you know, much love in my heart for Dwayne McDuffie.
Wow.
Because he was the person who mentored me and said to Dan DiDio at DC that I think a writer that has those two credits is a perfect mix for Static Shock, and then DC said yeah, and for Teen Titans. So it was just when they were deciding, and Dwayne had really been very influential in saying we should bring Static Shock back, and I was over the moon for the opportunity, the possibility of doing that. But they weren't quite ready to do it, and so they said, well, but if you want to be, you know, just get your, dip your toe in the water, we need a new writer for Teen Titans, and that way, you know, you can start and try it, and in about a year we'll be ready to launch Static Shock, and you can then transition to that, because that's why I was really there. I really loved Static. You know, from its origins, and was like the idea of bringing that back was a dream to me. And so that's how I came to write Teen Titans, was really through sort of being in the holding pattern, if you will, while
right.
I waited for Static Shock.
Yeah, Dwayne had created Static, and then it became an animated series, right? And then it sort of, it was Wildstorm, and then it was going to come back at that point. And then, yeah, unfortunately, we lost him. It was during this transitional, during this phase period. But you did get to, so that went away when he passed, but you did get to honor him with a Static story, right?
Yeah, I did. I got an opportunity to write like a special edition that was to honor Dwayne and to Dwayne's life. And, you know, for me, it was very challenging and very difficult. And I'd been working on the series, you know, launching the series, and was having lots of challenges, and had talked to him about the challenges I was having, which, as you know, happens often in the comic book world, where you might not be paired with the exact right editor for you. And so I was having a lot of challenges in getting it off the ground, and had just talked to him probably days before he passed away to say, I am having a very hard time and, you know, I'm not sure this is going to work for me. And, you know, and he's like, well, you know, nothing's ever easy. I'm like, gee, thanks.
Good advice. And, you know, this was on Teen Titans that the struggles were coming in?
On Static Shock, in the development process of Static Shock.
Oh, just so it had even gotten to that point where it was.
Oh, yes.
The ball was really rolling on this. Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm. Like, I'd looked at a one-year arc. I'd created a one-year arc and was looking at what that would be and getting his feedback on it and getting very excited about, you know, being finding the right artist from the original. Like, it was just all going. Some of it was going really well, some of it was going really awfully, but you know, he was always there. And after he passed, they put the book on hold pretty immediately, but then gave me the opportunity to, you know, write one that would be a tribute book.
What was the story you wanted to tell during that arc? I mean, just in broad strokes. What did you want to do with the character?
Oh, gosh. I haven't thought about that in so long. What was really interesting to me about this kid is, one, that he had a whole family life, you know, that he had parents and a sister and then friends. And I was really interested in what we don't see that often, I thought at the time, is the struggle to be a superhero. For the most part, when we see even origin stories, there's like 5 minutes where you're like, what? I'm a superhero? You know, and then it's completely accepted and you never look back and look at almost a socio-psychological look at what the heck this means, particularly if you are also, you know, a young teen male. And what does it mean? Because you can't possibly have the skill set or just the life experience to make the best decisions. But what we always have seen is they immediately make the best decisions. They immediately accept their calling as heroes, and it's never that difficult, except maybe there's a girl. So, I just wanted to really delve into that just based on what I know about teenagers and the challenge, and maybe someone who, you know, wasn't so gung-ho, and that this was a calling that he found it difficult to accept, and also for him to want to understand his powers in a way that I felt we didn't see often enough as well. It's just like, oh, I have this power. Okay, then I'll use it. But I wanted him, particularly because it was an opportunity for me also to just delve back into my science side. So let's look at this idea of, you know, how electricity as a superpower and you know, how it is conducted through his body, all of that. Like, I wanted him to want to understand that and to maybe want to change the way that his superpower worked. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I was interested in all of that. And his parents, like, what do the parents of a teenage superhero think? Mm-hmm. So all of that, I was interested in all of that.
Okay, this sounds like really good material for a series.
I agree.
You're a showrunner. You're a producer. You're a show creator. Superheroes are every show and movie has to be a superhero now. That's a given in Hollywood.
Oh my gosh, that's so true.
Can we do the math? Are you gonna bring us a Static Show? I'm seeing this. Look, they've talked about Jaden Smith. There's maybe interest
Jaden
there.
Yeah, Smith would be a great Static. Like,
okay.
I think
you worked with his dad.
I don't know what's in the works. Yes, I did. I don't know what's in the works over at you know, Warner Brothers and DC in terms of Static. But I hope that if they're smart, that somebody's as smart as you are and going, oh, we're already doing that.
Well, I know we've got Black Lightning coming up, and we're all stoked for that. I don't know. I mean, I know that's DC. I don't know. It's a similar character. So, I'm just throwing stuff out there. It would just be very cool. And I know, like, look, you probably have Will Smith on speed dial, right?
Oh, yes. Once you work with Will Smith on Fresh Prince of Bel-Air before he was a movie star, you definitely have him on speed dial.
Give him a call. Ask him if his kid's doing anything right now. That would be pretty cool. What did you think of him as Deadshot, by the way?
I loved it.
Okay.
I loved it. Well, and one of the things I love about him, just as an actor, is he's always stretching. He's always going to try something new.
Okay.
And I was a fan of the movie. Like, I really enjoyed it, and I know it was reviews were mixed, but I really, really enjoyed it. So, and I thought he did an excellent job. We have to take just a moment of pause so that we can go back to Black Lightning, because my dearest friends, two of my dearest friends, I should say, in the business, Salim Akil and Mara Brock Akil, are the creators of that. So I have to give them a big shout out, and I'm so looking forward to that. And
do you know anything about it? Like, do they like, are you guys having drinks? Are you guys having them over for dinner? Are they telling you anything about it? Because I'm stoked for this. I'm stoked for Black Panther. There's so much cool stuff coming out.
Oh, my God. There's so much cool stuff coming out. Like, I think I watched the Black Panther trailer maybe 18,000 times at this point. Like, it's just... But, of course, they're telling me stuff. And it also, they shoot in Atlanta, where the quad shoots. And so, you know... Awesome. So yeah, it's gonna be hot. That's what they're telling me.
Give us one little tease. Give us one non-spoiler tease, like that. Like, can you tell us anything that they've shared with you that like wouldn't spoil anything? Or we know it's gonna be awesome, but like, is there like a
no? It's gonna be awesome. Okay. I think that this is not like a spoiler at all, but I think that Cress Williams, who's an actor that I always admire, like he is kicking ass and taking names in this thing. So I would say look forward to what Cress Williams does in that lead role. It's going to, like, I think you're going to be like, wow, I knew he was good. I didn't know he was that good.
Yeah, I'm stoked for this thing. I want you writing some episodes, too. That would be pretty cool. Look, let's talk.
I'm not busy enough.
Because you're not busy enough. No, with everything that's going on. Well, let's talk about one thing you are busy with, The Punisher. Tell us your role. I know you've written two episodes of the series. It's on Netflix now. It's dropped. It's there. You can binge it.
It is streaming right now.
It's right there.
All 13 episodes of the first season. I don't know. I think it may be. I'm wondering if this is true. What I'm about to say. I'm like, is it the first series that I've ever been on where I'm like, I'm going to go watch that again.
Because
I so enjoyed it.
Okay. Well, it's kind of goes back to the Batman thing, too, because it's like, okay, so there's like this dark vigilante, this, you know, violent crime fighter, he is the knight. And then all of a sudden it's like, but the Punisher takes it like way next level.
A whole new level.
Yeah.
A whole new level.
Okay. So what's your role as co-executive producer? So you're not the show runner like you are with the quad, but you've got a lot to do on this thing because there's so many moving parts for you to be involved with, right?
Well, the showrunner on The Punisher is Steve Lightfoot. He created the show, and he's the showrunner. And then there are three of us co-executive producers. And most co-executive producer and executive producer level people started as, you know, writers trainees or staff writers. So what I think a lot of people don't understand that even as you go move up the ladder from staff writer to story editor to executive story editor to co-producer, producer, supervising producer, and then finally co-executive producer and executive producer, the bottom line is that you're a writer. So when you're adding those other producer titles, it just means as you climb the ladder as a writer on the writing staff, you're getting more and more responsibility. And the longer you do it, the more you've learned about producing the show. So as a co-producer, maybe you're asked like, hey, can you also take a look at music? Or, you know, you might give, as a showrunner myself, I love making sure that the rest of the writing staff has responsibilities because I think that part of my responsibility is to train the next generation of showrunners. So everybody on my staff always have responsibility. So maybe you're like, okay, you're going to look at wardrobe or you're going to be in charge of finding me new music. But when you go up the ladder to co-executive producer and then finally executive producer, it all becomes your responsibility. So that even as a co-executive producer on The Punisher, probably my scripts are expected to be, you know, in better shape when they come in, of course, when I deliver them than the staff writer, you know.
Steve's have to be perfect, but yours can be, like, close to perfect, right?
Close to perfect.
Right.
And I, obviously, as a showrunner, he often has a lot of other managerial things to do. And so when he's in that position... where he has to go take calls from the network or has to go deal with the actors or has to go make all about the million decisions that a showrunner has to make, then as a co-executive producer, you have to fill in, you know, when he is gone. On that show, we have one of the co-executive producers is Dario Scardapani, and he's what we consider Steve's second. And that just means the co-executive producer who is in second in command, if the showrunner has something else he or she has to go do. But again, you know, when you are at that level, you're pretty much expected to be able to fill in so that the, you know, the train stays on the track while the showrunner, you know, has to attend to everything else that it means, and everything when you're the showrunner. And television is a lot like being the producer on a film. Like, you have to know and make decisions about everything from what people are wearing to how sets will be decorated. So it is more than a notion.
Okay, so we've established you are in the know on The Punisher. Fair enough?
Fair enough.
Okay, here's the question. Punisher, obviously in the same universe as The Defenders. Got those awesome, great stuff on Netflix. Same universe as S.H.I.E.L.D., Agent Carter, Inhumans. A lot of cool stuff going on over there. Here's the $64,000 question. Is it the same universe as The Avengers?
It is a $64,000 question. And there's certainly, you know, a difference between Marvel television and Marvel film. And the people that, you know, I know that we know and deal with are the Marvel television people. And so it's all the same universe in some ways in that it's all Marvel. But what is done on the television side is very different than what's done on the feature film side. So I could say it's all the same universe. You know, but there are also then...
You're so diplomatic.
So,
and so vague.
No, I think it's true.
And so purposefully vague as the Disney lawyers hover.
No, is it really?
Okay,
I'm always confused about this.
Here's the thing. It always drives me nuts because when S.H.I.E.L.D. premiered, that was hashtag it's all connected. That was the social media push. That was the marketing. It's all connected. And then we know when you read the trades and everything, like we know... what was it? Ike Perlmutter... And mm-hmm. Kevin Feige, you know, these sort of two mm-hmm. universes colliding of the movie and TV universes. And then for a while, it wasn't connected at all. And I think even Marvel came on and said, now they're not connected. We could have mm-hmm. two different Daredevils. There could be a Daredevil in the movie, but it would be a different guy. And now it seems like there's a push that they might be connected again, whereas the Punisher, he's kind of doing his own thing. So you can't. It's like really vague with the Punisher. I know there's the Netflix characters kind of dip in, you know, from Daredevil and stuff, but I'm just confused. It's like, could your Punisher show up and hang out with the Avengers and Robert Downey Jr.? Could that happen?
Well, like, it's funny you say my Punisher. Like, I feel like my Punisher could hang out anywhere the hell he wants. So, you know, if he wanted to,
okay.
Why couldn't he?
Sure.
And he's killing it, so why not?
Literally, yeah, literally. So that's funny. I never know if these things are, because, you know, Samuel L. Jackson pops up in S.H.I.E.L.D. And you're like, okay, that's awesome. And then there's nothing for a while.
Like,
and you're
the glue is back,
yeah, it's like, what happened? So I don't know if they, okay, you don't have to say specifically, but have you had those discussions In as a writer, so that you know what to write, or that you know what to produce, or that you know how to keep it all cohesive? Have those discussions taken place?
Well, I'll tell you, and I promise you, the thing that I'm the worst at is not just telling it like it is. So if I am vague, it's shocking even to me. But I tell you the honest truth is that the Punisher and his world is so specific.
Yeah.
And it is not, you know, sort of based in the same world as for you know, Jessica and Daredevil and, you know, Luke, the Defenders, right? That's why I say, well, it is all the same universe, if you will, in the general sense of Marvel.
Right.
But then you have, you know, but you might define just the universe of the Hell's Kitchen shows as a universe into itself, and yet Punisher isn't part of that.
Yeah,
and
he's very,
you know,
much
so that's
thing.
Why I'm not trying to be vague as much as, like, they are all part of the Marvel universe, but those four shows and that they, you know, live in Hell's Kitchen is different than Punisher, who also is different in that he doesn't have, you know, superpowers. So yes, we're all in the same big family, but, you know, there are also extended families.
Well, no, I think as fans, we like that aspect of seeing Lady Sif on S.H.I.E.L.D. and Samuel L. Jackson. And
yeah.
You know, Captain America ends, and it goes right into S.H.I.E.L.D., and you see the clips from Captain America. And then that all kind of went away. So I think as fans, we love that, because in the DC universe, it's like there's a Flash on TV and there's a Flash in the movies. And we're like, okay, well, that's weird, but... You know,
I'm a fan, so I agree with you. Like, you love that kind of crossover. I'm a fan, and you love that kind of stuff. You get really excited about it. But I think that because the Punisher lives in, you know, his own universe in the way that I just described it, then there isn't much, you know, talk about such things. Because he is in his own universe.
He's in his own van. And it's like...
He's in his own van. Okay?
He just doesn't leave the van.
that's when your world is getting really small.
Yeah, but it's just in the van. A gun in a van, yeah. Well, what was your background with the character? Like, you said Batman, so you were really up on Batman. But had you known much about the Punisher? Or did you have to do some homework kind of coming in?
Homework because, I mean, I knew about him. And just as a comic book fan, you know, I knew about the Punisher. I knew about the Garth Ennis of it all and why those were the years. And then, you know, because I hang out in my comic book store and then you'd hear like, ooh, Punisher Max. So I knew about all that stuff. And I
love that you have a comic book store, by the way.
Yes, I do.
All right.
Yes, and shout out to in Pasadena, California, where I live. And so... So I knew like that, but I did grow up a DC girl very much. And kind of from DC, I became more interested in independent comics, probably because where I saw more people of color, where I saw more women doing, you know, things that were not so specific to their gender. So I just started to gravitate there. It's probably more in junior high and high school. But I think that, so I was more DC, and there was absolutely lots of research, and but I knew what I was looking for, you know. And then, of course, Marvel was very helpful in giving us access to everything that we might need. And it was fun. You know, there were other writers on the staff who, you know, we would read together and compare notes. And then you start to have, you know, your favorite runs and that kind of thing. So at this point, I'm certainly... all in.
Okay. Were there certain things that you were reading in the comic books or even like visually maybe that you were able to bring into the series or lines or – because I know there's an arc that you set the arc. It's a 13-episode arc. We got to fit into this. But within that, you can all – as a writer, you can always sort of bring things in because you got, you know, 13 hours to fill. Are there some things in the comic books that you liked and went, oh, I want to put that in. I just want to put that little, you know, that little hidden thing in there.
Well, sometimes, I mean, to some extent, I mean, it's really, Steve, Lightfoot, who, like I said, created the show, had been, you know, working on it with Netflix since his deal was done, and he'd been working on it for a while. So he knew, you know, the direction that he wanted the first season to go. And had been doing a lot of work about that. So it was more of like you said, maybe a little something here, a little something there. I know that I did like, and I think it was the first episode that I wrote, which was episode 8. I think that's right.
Cold Steel.
I just did, yes, gosh. It's like this tiny little thing where, you know, he's cooking for a very hungover Micro. And he talks about, you know, Micro's like, what is this I'm eating? He goes, it's pho, it's Vietnamese, blah, blah, blah. That, for me, was just the tiniest little nod to, you know, original Vietnam years for the Punisher. Like, you know what I mean? So they're tiny little Easter eggs like that that I just want to nod to the sort of original time period of the book. Even though it's obviously contemporary now, but so sometimes little things like that. Sometimes a character, you're like, oh, you know what? That character was cool. We're already going to do this thing in the story. We should do it through that character who's already part of canon. So little things like that.
I know the character himself came out of sort of the gritty '70s vigilante movies, the anti-hero movies. I'm thinking like Death Wish and, you know, Dirty Harry and things like that. Did you, were you a fan of those films, and did you go back and watch some things like that to kind of get a style perspective on the character?
Well, again, so much of those kinds of decisions are made by the showrunner. But I think that in terms of even the stuff that, you know, we did for research and the things that he maybe mentioned often or things that he really liked that were his influences. So that's, you know, a question you want to ask any showrunners, like, what are your influences? Because your job is really to support their vision when you're on the writing staff. So everything that, you know, that he talked about that he liked. And then, but I was always absolutely a fan of those. In fact, it's like influenced by my grandmother. My grandmother was like a huge Clint Eastwood fan.
So your mom's buying you Batman comics. Grandma's watching Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, like what choice did I have to finally end up writing The Punisher, right? Nice. But that was, and my mother, the Westerns were everything in my house. And then when Dirty Harry came along, my grandmother was like, there is nothing else that exists in the world except Dirty Harry. And so all of that stuff. And then some of it, you know, I remember being very little, and then it finally started showing up on television or, you know, on VHS tapes, you know, when there was a Blockbuster. So that all of the things that they talked to me about when I was a little kid, or even that existed before I existed, that we could now go rent. So it's everything they ever talked about. And of course, I also come from a, you know, just a home where blaxploitation movies were really big and really important. But it's like a lot of it happened before I was born. Some of it I was too little. But now, like, just this idea of kick ass vigilantism was something that I think I've known since I was, I don't know, 5 or 6. Yeah. That was an important theme in my life.
Well, it's so interesting because they're doing Luke Cage now, and it's like that sprang right from those blaxploitation films.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, those comics. So
that's the most wonderful part about that show, you know. Yeah. It's just a such wonderful tribute to that era.
Yeah. It really is. Well, I mean, how do you see the character of Frank Castle? I mean, there's so much with this case. He's not a superhero. I mean, he's not in the traditional sense. Mm-hmm. How do you see him?
I think the thing that, you know, drew me to it, and what I think I bring to the writing staff, is that I very much see the human side, of Frank Castle. The side that's in pain that won't ever go away, the one who really is, to me, inside still has a gentle soul, but the worst thing that could happen to any of us, for me, it's very relatable, because I don't know who I would be if someone took out my entire family. I cannot tell you that I would, you know, be okay and still live a quote-unquote normal life. So for me, I really relate to that, and that I think that at his core, he is a good and decent person who cannot tolerate wrong.
There always seems to be some amount of controversy tied to the character. I got to ask you about just leading up to the premiere on Netflix. There was so much going on. I know they and explain this to us if you can, because it was originally supposed to come in after The Defenders. And then I think because of the popularity on Daredevil, they just sort of amped that up a bit, didn't they?
Now, I cannot tell you that for sure.
Okay, I didn't know if you were in on that level or not.
Yes, I was not.
Okay.
It is that's absolutely above my pay grade. and also things do, like you said, they change, you know, based on a million different things.
Right.
And so things, you know, orders have changed, all kinds of things change for a whole bunch of different reasons. And what we're reminded of, and I'm fine with that, is that our job is just to deliver an amazing show.
Yeah.
And the rest of it is out of our hands.
Well, and I know that moving it up to where it was, it just, I know they were going to have a New York Comic Con panel, the big push to get that on. And then, unfortunately, we had this horrific tragedy in Las Vegas.
Yes.
Take us to that, because, you know, everybody's working so hard on the show. They're trying to get it going on. And then all of a sudden this happens and you're premiering this sort of really violent character who's known for guns and things. So I know they canceled the panel. Just sort of take us into that era of just what was going on behind the scenes as to what decisions were that you heard. And what did you think about all that? And again, like, what I guess, what responsibility does a show like this have in light of real events?
I mean, I think that at the end of the day, it is a television show that I think is about so much more than, you know, violence and guns. I think, you know, the character, as I was saying, to me, is about, you know, an examination of personal pain. And it's an examination of the decisions we make, depending on how you define what is good and right and what is evil and wrong. At the time that all of that happened, I go back and say again, it's a television show, and, you know, you can't even begin to compare, oh, the date of a television show has to be changed with the fact that people, many people, lost their lives, and families who survive are still victims as well and will never be the same from that, you know. And so if there is anything that might you might think might add to that pain or might, you know, somehow negatively affect it, then it's just a television show. And so, you know, it's worth looking at that and making sure that that you're not adding to that, but also making sure that it has a that the show isn't, you know, connected to something that it shouldn't be connected to. So I don't know. Really, there wasn't a lot of talk about, gosh, we've worked so hard and now our date has to change. There was no talk of no such talk.
Yeah, it was more like kind of, you know, like how are we going to handle it? I thought it was handled well, just canceling it altogether. The optics would have been so bad at that point. Does that, and
exactly.
I know it was all done before. I mean, everything was shot, edited, ready to go. Moving into season two, does real life impact? Because I know we've seen this on Supergirl. Like they had a terrorist bombing and they had to bump the episode a few weeks because something had just happened and the optics would have been horrible.
Yeah.
So does that have any impact going into like season two of all these real world events that we couldn't even begin to write? Are happening, does that impact how you handle a show like this or, you know, action adventure, things like that?
Yeah. Well, again, you know, on this specific show, I'm not the showrunner, but, you know, who makes the ultimate decisions, of course, with Marvel and with Netflix, what the direction of the season will be. But I think that in the world that we live in, and you almost can't account for what will be happening. Because the moment you do that, something else will happen. So it's just impossible to know. So I think that from my opinion, and I only speak for myself, I think that you have to just do the show that is in your creative heart to do. Because if you start trying to do the show to anticipate, you know, what might happen or to accommodate for what is happening now, by the time you finish, you know, with the show, shooting it, editing it, preparing it for air, the world and landscape will have changed again.
What are you most proud of with season one of The Punisher? You got, it's all ready, it's out there for everybody.
God.
What are you most proud of when you look back on this and just bringing that comic book to life?
I am proud of so much. Like, I'm so proud of the way it looks. Like, it's just beautiful to look at. I'm really proud and I think just impressed might be a better word, because sometimes I look at it and go, was I part of that? Because it's so impressive, you know. The cast, like, there's some just damn good acting, and you know what John Bernthal was able to bring to this character, even different and the more layered than, you know, in Daredevil, it just it's so amazing. I'm really impressed with the writing and the production design and, you know, the stunts, like everything about it. I look at it. That's why I'm like, I'm going to go look again, you know? So I just recently finished watching on Netflix, because we obviously have access to it before it, you know, it's on Netflix. But so I'd watched them all. And then I watched them all on Netflix when it first dropped. And then in the last couple of weeks, I just watched it all again and did see new stuff to be excited about. So I feel very honored to be a part of it. And I think the thing that you would never know or see is sort of the writing staff and behind the scenes. And in that first season, we're such an unlikely bunch to come together and to write this thing that it's one of the things I'm most in awe about in terms of Steve Lightfoot, how he brought us all together. Because we're so different, and it's not like a group of all comic book nerds. There's like a couple of us. But it's, you know, from every walk of life, just from our personal lives and from our professional experience, some of us have talked about, had he not brought us together on this show, our paths would have never crossed. Our careers, you know, my credits are so different from everyone else's credits and want some other writers, like, we never would have been on like the same list, quote unquote, for jobs. And yet he pulled from all these different, you know, places to bring us together. And we were just an amazing and tight knit group that really worked well together. And I think for me, that's not the part that you or people who are fans will ever see, but the part I'm most happy about and most proud of is the way the writing staff came together and worked together and had each other's back and just was this amazing team in that first season.
Are you going to be involved in season two?
Well, I'd kind of be an idiot not to, wouldn't I?
I don't know. I don't know how these things work. What do you want to do? Where do you want to take the character? Because now you've got 13 episodes in, you've got all these comic books, you've got all these stories you want to tell. Where would you like to take the character?
Yeah, there's so much.
Is there a story arc you'd like to, because what we got, I don't know if we can say, I guess everyone kind of knows what the villain's going to be for season two.
What? Tell me, who's going to be the villain?
It's Jigsaw, right? Isn't it Jigsaw?
I don't know, is it?
All right, whatever. You're so cool.
You said whatever.
You're so slick.
I want you to tell me.
What would you like to do? If it were Jigsaw.
Yeah, I love everything about what happened in season one, and the cast was just freaking amazing, as I said. I think that, I mean, I could see it going on, the show going on for years and years and years, just because of the idea of it, the idea of there's always going to be, you know, wrong to right. There are so many books that, you know, that I love, like I mentioned earlier, all the Punisher Max stuff. Like, I love all of that stuff, and I'd love to see more of it. There are books that are my favorites. Like, I love the stuff with the five mob wives. Like, that would just be so cool to me in a season. All of that kind of stuff. I'm just into all of it. So I don't know if there's a wrong direction we could go with it, but it's going to be cool.
If I could give you a shot at writing for one comic book character, whether a feature film, TV series, comic book, anything, which character would you take and what story would you want to tell?
Oh, you don't like the easy questions. You don't like asking the easy questions, do you?
What'd you have for breakfast? There's an easy one.
I know. Thank you. Please. My goodness.
Bagel and some coffee, right?
Okay. You know why this is, why I pause and why it's so challenging is because I will always, you know, Batman will always be my first love. But I don't automatically choose him because there's been amazing work already done. So in some ways I feel like I could not possibly improve, you know, on The Dark Knight. Like, it's just freaking perfect. And so that's why I don't automatically go there, which is why it makes it a difficult thing for me to answer. But I tell you, I'm very...
You could improve on where he is now. Is that out loud? Sorry.
Yeah, that was. Hello, we're still on this call. Yes, hello. We're still talking. I don't know if you can still hear me, but I can still hear you.
I'd like you to take a crack at Batman. So if it wasn't Batman, you know, Riverdale, you got the Archies, you can bring back your youth there. think about it. We'll see what you got in store for us.
Yes, that was not an easy one.
Okay,
so
we'll see what you got in store for us. Well, look, we said this, you know, over and over. There's a lot of amazing movies out there and TV shows with comic book characters. So many involving African American superheroes now. I mean, I think this is probably the most at any time in history. What do you think of these projects and the opportunities for more African American directors, producers, writers, showrunners? People you can maybe mentor. What do you think about where the state of superheroes and African American superheroes stands right now?
I mean, I think in the state of African American superheroes, we're in a very cool place. You know, my wish is always that it's not a moment, you know, that it is a movement that becomes part of the landscape in a regular way forever. And so when you look at things like Black Panther that just looks like it's going to be so freaking amazing, you're so happy because it is still true that, you know, if people of color do something that is not quality or doesn't end up turning out as good as you would hope, there are not a lot of other shots. It becomes like, well, they can't do that, or no one wants to watch that, or we tried. But that is not true of projects that aren't, you know, with people of color characters or people behind the scenes. You know, you're never going to hear like, well, we tried one white superhero and it was bad, so we're not going to do anymore.
I could do
you
that
don't
again.
Ever hear that. Yeah.
No, you're right. I have never heard that. Yeah.
So in some ways you're like, we want the opportunity to be just as bad as everybody else.
Yeah.
But
you got to make it good.
Also,
you got to make it good. Yeah, you're right.
But
you
it has to be good.
Right.
And so I get very excited about how clearly, like, exceptional Black Panther looks like it is, because we're not in a world yet where things are equal. So we need it to be good so that there will be other opportunities. Black Lightning looks amazing, mm-hmm. and we need it to be good so that there will be other opportunities. I would love the opportunity to do a show and or movies that have women superheroes. So I'm excited about the success of Wonder Woman. You know, I'm excited about, but I'd also love to do things with, you know, people of color in the mix. So it makes me excited that those things look so amazing, because fortunately or unfortunately, we need them to be excellent so that, again, we become more of the landscape and are here to stay, as opposed to a moment where we are, you know, where Black is the new Black.
I have a feeling you're going to be involved in a lot of these things. I just got a weird
yes,
feeling
sir.
About it. Yeah, I think if you do, we're going to find out about on social media. Are you out there on social media?
I am out there, but I'll call you back directly and tell you. But other people can find me at Follow Felicia D. So that's Follow and then Felicia, F-E-L-I-C-I-A, and then the letter D on both Twitter and Instagram.
That is where we're going to follow you. Man, I'm telling you what, Felicia, it is always so cool when someone who's writing, producing, running these shows actually has a love for the source material. I can't tell you how awesome that is. So good on you
totally
for that.
Do.
Yeah, good on you
Thank
for that.
Thank you.
Looking forward to everything you've got going on. The quad's coming up here right around the corner. So looking forward to that. Thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
I thank you so much for your time. It has really been a blast. Just so much fun. And I will continue to follow and see what you're up to.
All right, so what did we learn today? Oh, here's what we learned. Here's what I learned. Make sure your kids read a lot of comic books, and quite possibly one day they can grow up to be a successful writer, producer, showrunner in Hollywood as well. I think that's the takeaway I'm going to get from today's show. Season 2 of The Quad premieres January 23rd on BET. Season 1 is streaming now on BET.com, so check that out if you haven't already. Season 1 of The Punisher, it is on Netflix right now. It is waiting for you. Go find it. Go get it. Watch it. Is it part of the Marvel movie universe? Beats me. I don't know if we found out anything today. But we can all try to figure it out together as we binge watch Marvel TV shows on Netflix. Let me know. Let me know what you think. Huge thanks to Felicia for dropping by today. You will find links to her social media pages in the show notes for this episode at my website, comicbookcentral.net, as well as the Comic Book Central page on Blog Talk Radio. Don't forget to drop me a line. Tell me what you think of the Marvel Netflix shows. Tell me what movies you're looking forward to this year. Man, Black Panther, just around the corner. It looks so amazing. Tell me how you plan on celebrating Superman's big anniversary this year. 80th anniversary of Superman, 40th for the movie, 30th for Superboy. How do you plan on celebrating? Tell me. Send me an email, joe@comicbookcentral.net, or you can just click that Signal Me tab on the website, comicbookcentral.net. All right, kids, that is it for today. I think I'm going to go and pitch my Urkel meets the Punisher idea to the folks at Marvel. I don't know. Maybe they'll take me up on it. I want that comic book. How cool would that be? But fear not. I shall return soon. Like I mentioned earlier, I got a lot of super surprises headed your way. Working some things out right now. Lining up some schedules. A lot of guests. We're just working that out right now. So I promise I will announce my next guest first on social media. So be sure to follow Comic Book Central on Twitter at ComicBookCTRL. Like the show and share the lair on Facebook. Facebook.com/ComicBookCentralNetwork. Make sure you get the network. If you're not already doing that, go do that. You follow the show on social media, you will hear the guest announcement there first. Until next time, stay on the Punisher's good side. Keep reading those comics. And thanks for joining me here in the lair. Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivations 3.0 Imported License. All the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of their respective holders.
Did you do that?